There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Glad to have you here. And lots of toll talk. Of course, this is a subject that we've been talking about for months, if not more than that, on this show. But it is now coming down to crunch time with a May 23rd deadline for public comment. Of course, you had meetings last week in Spanish Fort and in Mobile to get commentary on this. But what is going to happen? What is the, I mean, we've got a couple different questions. Number one, are we going to see the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project built? Number two, who's going to pay for it? What tolls will be what? And what can be done before that gets going for maybe a reduction for local folks in the rate they would pay to go over a bridge and through the Wallace Tunnel? This conversation we had a week ago with State Senator Chris Elliott, and we're having it again, too, because the subject is just seems to be growing like a backup on I-10 eastbound. Hey, Senator Elliott.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
Hey, it's a kind of walk folks through, first of all, this question about how it is funded, how the project is funded, because when you told me this last week, it really shocked me because I, for the longest time, I had believed in this 80-20 split idea that it was federal dollars at 80% federal dollars, 20% some amalgamation of state, municipal, or elsewhere. You said that is not the deal.
That is absolutely not the deal. That was the way things used to work when there were earmarks. And we have done away with earmarks in D.C. So you don't have that happening anymore. The current plan that ALDOT has presented and for the capital stack, right, which is the how we make up the funding for this project, has about 7% of the total project cost coming from the United States Department of Transportation.
Seven.
It is right at about $150 million out of a $2.1 billion project anticipated cost.
Y'all hear
and
that?
That is from an infra grant. And, Sean, that's not guaranteed. Mayor Stimson and I will probably be in D.C. next month advocating vigorously on behalf of that infra grant. But that really just is an infra grant for the West Tunnel interchange and is only about $150 million if we get that, and that's not guaranteed.
Wow. Wow, y'all, I mean, $2 billion project, and we could maybe, hopefully, $150 million in federal dollars.
That's correct. The balance is made up of the what we call the owner's equity, the concessionaire's equity, okay? That's the toll company putting their cash in the deal, okay? Private activity bonds, those are loans that the concessionaire will take out. TIFIA grant, which is a transportation infrastructure funding program through USDOT. Those are a TIFIA loan, I should say. That's the important word there is loan. You got to pay it back. So those are federally guaranteed loans. And then the ALDOT funding that ALDOT will put in. That's when I talk about the public subsidy, that's what we're talking about. That's the down payment, if you will, that ALDOT will put in this project. And right now, that's anticipated to be about a $450 million.
Okay, so in our list of who has money going in, the private concessionaire has the most money going in, ALDOT second, federal government third?
That's correct, and okay. and the private concessionaire by far at this point has way more money going in, if you will. So 150 from the feds, 450 from ALDOT, the balance, almost three-quarters, is coming from the concessionaire, which is why you see toll rates as high as they are. And why you see, you know, a $6 toll indexed, by the way, you probably haven't talked about that yet, to the consumer price index. So it will increase annually if we look at how that's currently planned.
Yeah, I talked about that last hour, that if I remember correctly off the top of my head, it was like a 55-year sunset on this deal, and then with this indexing, it could be raised. I don't know if it's yearly or it comes, you know, every decade. I don't know how that's done, but yeah, those tolls could go up.
They could, and what really pains me is the indexing starts when the agreement, the financial close, is signed with the concessionaire, which means that the rate of toll could start increasing before the first toll is ever paid. So Aldot may set this toll at $6 to start with, but by the time anybody's driving on it, it may be set.
Oh, my gosh. Just joining us, talking to State Senator Chris Elliott about toll. And I want to get into your discussion about some rate reduction going forward for frequent users, people around here. But before we do, the apples-to-apples comparison, you brought it up. I've talked about it. You know, people will text in with, well, there's this toll or there's this lack of toll on this road in New Jersey or this place in Texas. But the interesting one to me is, forget those. Let's talk about right here in Alabama and what's going on in Birmingham. They're getting, what is that, $1 billion project there, and they're not told?
Correct. Close to $1 billion is being spent downtown Birmingham on about a mile and a half of elevated interstate. It's a huge project. It's a very expensive project. But two things are not happening. One, nobody driving on that project is being asked to pay a toll. Why are we in coastal Alabama any different than that? And I would submit that we're not. And two, the maintenance costs, ongoing maintenance costs for that project are not built in. In our project, in the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, we've got maintenance costs for the next 50 years that are being built in up front into the project cost, which is one of the reasons it's so expensive. Again, imagine your house or your car came with a 50-year maintenance plan and what that would look like and how much that would cost up front. And that's exactly what we have here. Right down, Sean, not just the painting, not just the asphalt on the road, not just the concrete bridge deck, but right down to the white truck with the blinking light on it that pushes you out of the way when your car breaks. That's in there, too. Right. And we're paying for all of that up front.
Wouldn't that necessarily come, if I'm risking private capital and I'm entering into this agreement, I'm going to try to, I mean, I'm covering my backside every which way possible going forward, where, you know, you usually in a public entity that doesn't happen. And in this case, they're trying to make sure that they can continue to maintain it and make a profit going forward. I'm sure. I mean, that's what I would try to do.
That's exactly right. But that's what's so offensive for me representing coastal Alabama and Baldwin County, is that Aldot is not offering to pay for the maintenance. Aldot's not offering to pay for any of that for the next 50 years. They're putting all of that cost on the project. They don't do that in Birmingham. They're not doing that in Huntsville. It is fundamentally unfair. They are treating us fundamentally differently than they are treating folks in other parts of the state, and that's simply not acceptable.
So what do they tell you when you go in there and say, hey, look at this? I mean, you point out what's happening here. Do they go, or do they give you an answer? What do they say?
Well, the short answer is, well, there's not enough money. And that's what you will always hear from bureaucrats. And my answer is, okay, well, we just raised gas tax. So there's a chunk of change coming to you that wasn't before. And this is a public project, albeit one of the largest public works projects in the Southeast, certainly the largest that Alabama's ever even contemplated. So I will give you that we may need some portion of a toll, and that some toll level may be acceptable, especially since 60% of this will be paid for people that aren't from Alabama, mm-hmm. Okay, and certainly aren't from coastal Alabama. I'm happy to let them help us pay for this with non-Alabama tax dollars. But, Sean, we ought to at least get the $1 billion that Birmingham's getting.
Yeah.
At minimum. And then we ought to at least not have to bear the burden of paying up front for the maintenance of this project, which will drive the cost down even further, which will mean the toll that you and I pay to go back and forth is half or less of what we're talking about currently.
You know, and
that's what it has to be.
Yeah, and you mentioned these numbers. I think it's important because I know for a long time the discussion was $800 million, and I knew that wasn't right, and then it went to $1 billion, and then we turn around, it's $2.5 billion. But that is part of, a suite of things being done. The bridge is the emblem, but the bridge isn't the only thing that would be done in this project, right?
Correct. And the most expensive thing is a complete rework of the Bayway. It is widening the bayway to 8 lanes from the existing 4 and elevating the bayway another 12 to 15 feet.
And what about this? And I've been thinking about this more since we talked. Are we going to do away with the structure of the bayway as it stands and put a new, you know, 4 and 4 that are higher structure? Or are we going to somehow put the lift on the sections there and lift them up? How's that going to be done?
Well, the current plan, and this has been looked at over a number of years, the current plan that ALDOT has is to demolish the existing bayway and replace it with a completely new structure that is 8 lanes wide, 2 4-lane sections in each direction. The train of thought, and this gets into some of the engineering, and I'll let you discuss the specifics with some of the ALDOT engineers, mm-hmm. but the train of thought was we have to add additional lanes on the bayway. We're adding 6 lanes of bridge. We've got 4 lanes of tunnel traffic currently, okay? There's 10 lanes going on to 4 lanes, so we've got to increase right. the capacity of the bayway, yes. no question. Now, how do we do that? Well, do you just add lanes separate from the existing bayway? And if so, do you add them at the existing height, or do you add them higher to get them out of storm surge danger? And that was when the discussion really kind of broke down. You couldn't get between the lane, the existing and the new bayway lanes if they were at different heights. That was going to be a problem. You were leaving a portion of it down low that was susceptible to storm surge. And the decision was made by the engineers, again, not my decision, but the decision was made by the design engineers and the planners that it was better to just go ahead and redo the entire bayway at much higher levels and with 8 lanes.
Yeah, the idea of raising, R-A-I-S-E, raising the bayway because of what happened on I-10 and Pontchartrain over Escambia Bay. But I'm trying to think, and it's not like I have all the facts in front of me here, but just anecdotally, I don't remember us having an issue with the water getting high enough to threaten the bayway at the height that it is now. Do you? I mean, is there information out there? I mean, I know that there's always a chance. There's a chance anything could happen, but is that a clear and present danger?
During Katrina, we got to the bottom of the girders on the bayway. It was that high, where it was kind of lapping, the waves were lapping at the bottom.
Okay.
And you saw that, the corresponding water level heights on some of the restaurants on the causeway.
Mm-hmm.
That's as close as we've gotten, and I think everybody understands that was a very big storm. Had Katrina made landfall in Mobile Bay, that or just, you know, just west of Mobile Bay, we could have very well lost the bayway itself. And again, that's what happened in Pontchartrain when you had landfall of Katrina there on I-10, and they have a nice brand new very elevated I-10 section that goes across Lake Pontchartrain, and that is what happened over Escambia in Escambia County in Pensacola with the I-10 sections after Ivan. We lost those. So I think there is some merit in that discussion. The problem continues to be, okay, great, how do we pay for it?
Right, and when we come back from the break, I want to talk more about how we pay for it and also the plan you have to try to make the argument that folks down here should be given some relief from whatever the full rate is for crossing through under the tunnel or over the bridge. Coming right back, State Senator Chris Elliott, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 123 FM Talk 106.5, and continue our conversation. State Senator Chris Elliott and talking about the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, the hefty price tag, and who's going to pay for it. That's always the question here. And if you were under the impression that it was all going to be, you know, like a 80-20, the feds paying 80 and local paying 20, it sounds like it's 7% federal dollars.
That's correct, Sean.
Ow.
We're at 93.7.
Ow.
Yeah.
Ow. So, you know, it's how are we going to pay for this? There's one major discussion how we're going to pay for it. There's another part of it of, you know, why does Birmingham get one deal? We get another deal. Also getting a lot of text in here about people looking through this almost like it's line item, seeing, you know, which y'all probably see, what can you scratch? What do you keep? This texter says, how much will we save if pedestrian and bike lanes are eliminated?
You know, I think the last number I saw on what ALDOT has proposed is probably about a $10 million cost, and that removes the bike lane that goes up across the Cochran-Africatown Bridge and then back down 165. The initial estimates for what they wanted to put on the bridge was $60 million. And that's where I blew my lid and said, guys, we have lost all concept of reality. We need to stop and back up. You know, at some point, you can give everybody a helicopter ride across the bay that shows up with a bike cheaper than you can build the bike lane. I mean, this we just sometimes we've gone too far, and I'm afraid that that might be where we are with this bridge, Sean.
When you say gone too far, you mean in the scope of it, or what are you thinking?
Well, I think we've probably gone too far in requiring that all the maintenance be taken care of on the front end. Now, I've got ALDOT trying to look at some numbers and try to claw some of that back out, but I think it's fair to assume that there is big money, as you mentioned before, that's being baked in by the folks that are pricing this bridge out. And I think we need to back up from that. I think that's if you go to the big pieces first, that's where you start carving. I also think that we need to take a step back and look at how this thing is funded from the very beginning. You know, your listeners will understand, and I understand, if you put more money in a project, you know, more down payment up front, your monthly payments are lower. Well, that's exactly what the state of Alabama needs to do on this project. We need to increase the amount of public subsidy in this project up front. We don't need to be talking about $450 million. We need to be talking about the same billion that Birmingham's getting. Once we do that, that will decrease the amount of toll that our local users, our frequent users, are having to pay. That will decrease the total amount of the project because we won't have all of that interest and carrying charges that go along with it. And that's probably the only way this project moves forward.
Now, what about an additional push here for, let's say it is built, and I learned something from you the other day, it can't be based on address, but frequency of use. Would there be a, you know, Bama Pass or something like that that would give local folks a better rate than somebody coming from Schenectady?
Sure. Schenectady. I hadn't heard that word in a while. Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. Now, FHWA, the Federal Highway Administration, likes the term frequent user discount as opposed to a local discount. They're one and the same at the end of the day. The people that are using it on a daily basis are locals. And to the extent that they're not, they're using it as much as a local is, and I don't think that's necessarily an issue to fight with the feds over. But at the end of the day, we've got to figure out a way to make the toll for folks that are going to be most impacted by it a heck of a lot lower than what we're talking about now. I mean, I'm talking about a dollar or $2 toll as opposed to the $6 toll, and oh, by the way, that will continue to rise over time. And that's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to get the public subsidy. The amount ALDOT puts in up front, that billion plus, is going to have to increase in order to make that happen. It's just that simple.
Wow. I'm looking at the text line here and questions coming in. Although Steve just goes as Steve on the text line, I won't guess his last name is Machiavelli. He says maybe we'll get lucky and have a hurricane this year that will knock the bayway down so we can get it rebuilt with no tolls. I mean, that's true, though, right? I mean,
there is merit in that train of thought. There really is. Because here's what we're looking at. This decision is going to change the way that the economy works in coastal Alabama for the next 5 decades. How we move about, how Mobile County and Baldwin County interact with each other is going to be fundamentally changed by this project. And there is a reasonable train of thought that says, okay, in New Orleans on Lake Pontchartrain, they didn't pay for that with a toll.
Yep.
And when we certainly didn't do that in Escambia County.
Right.
There is an option here, and ALDOT calls it a no-build option. Now, I'm not sold on that yet, but there is some logic in that train of thought that says the feds will swoop in here, and we won't be talking about 7% if this is post-disaster cleanup, if this is a federally declared disaster. Now, do I think that's the prudent way to plan our infrastructure? by crossing our fingers and hoping for a massive 500-year hurricane? No. I don't think that's the way we ought to proceed. Yeah. But I understand where Steve's coming from here, and it seems almost is a viable option when compared to a $6-7 toll for 50 years.
By the way, too, and I'll let you take another bite at this apple because you addressed it earlier, but somebody's saying, hey, can we use the gas tax to pay for this. That's kind of what you said. You said to Aldott.
Yes, we absolutely should be using the gas tax to pay for this. It won't pay for all of it, but it should pay for a whole lot more of it than what the proposal is. The gas tax generates about $200 million for Aldott annually, okay? $300 million total, $100 of which goes to counties and cities. It's split up in various ways. About $200 million a year to Aldott, okay? We're talking about a $2 billion project. Okay, there, you understand the numbers there, $200 million to $2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying, again, that we need no toll. I'm just saying it has to be significantly less than what we're talking about currently. And the way to do that, again, is to use more of the gas tax money that, oh, by the way, every single legislator south of Montgomery voted for. Every one of them. Democrats, Republicans, with the exception of Vivian Figures. But everybody else voted for this thing. Now, it's time for the Ivey administration and for Director Cooper to understand we need to put that money to work here in coastal Alabama.
There we go.
And that's exactly what I'm proposing they do. Use some of that money to increase the public subsidy up front, decreasing the amount of tolls our locals are paying so that we don't screw up the economy here in coastal Alabama.
State Senator Chris Elliott, thanks for your time. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Sean.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 137 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. On this Monday, grabs some phone calls and text at 343-0106. Any word, Dalton? How are we supposed to monitor this? You know, Alyssa Milano is calling for a sex strike to protest against strict abortion laws. She's specific on Georgia. Why is she not picking on Alabama yet? She's picking on Georgia. Is there any way to monitor whether she is or she's not? How are we supposed to gauge if she's living up to her end of the bar? I mean, just these are, is that not a fair question? Is that not a fair question? If she comes out and says she's going to go on sex strike to protest this, can I not ask that question? I don't know. A couple of stories here in international news I want to look at, too. Number one, I'm really, as I've been focused for a long time, on stories about the tariff and now what has kicked in. As of Friday night into, I mean, it's, yeah, Friday night at midnight, Thursday night into Friday morning of last week, the additional tariffs went into effect on consumer goods coming out of China. You know, in the past, these tariffs have mostly affected components, right? So they've affected American companies, but they were components that went into whatever they made. They bought this piece of, they make widgets. So they had a widget component that they bought from China and they put it in there. And they sometimes passed those costs along, sometimes ate those costs to stay competitive. But now what we're going to be dealing with going forward are consumer items, just, you know, plastic things out of China. And that's going to start making everyday Americans take notice of this tariff war between the U.S. and China. And plus, on June 1st, I think, yeah, China's going to raise tariffs on $60 billion worth of U.S. goods in retaliation. I like that ratio, though, the increased duties on. So we Trump administration's increased duties on $200 billion worth of Chinese products. And the Chinese are raising tariffs on $60 billion in U.S. goods. But that doesn't help you much if it's your goods you're selling there in China. I've been watching the market all day. It is not liking this. The way I understand from last week to this week is kind of what's happened with the markets is the markets had built in this tariff battle. They had, you know, they're working, you know, a quarter ahead, two quarters ahead in some cases, and the markets have built this in. But what has caused the uncertainty, at least what the word is, and, you know, maybe a lot of lemming effect too, but what's caused the uncertainty out there is that it looks like this could go on much longer, whether it's the, you know, adherence to this move on tariffs of the president or it's the Chinese. This rumor the Chinese are waiting around for 2020. They're waiting around to see if a Democrat gets elected who might remove these tariffs. It's going to be a tough thing, I think, going forward. And I think the Trump administration, for political reasons, has wanted to keep those tariffs off the consumer products, right? Fight this tariff war, but don't affect, everyday prices for Americans. Now, Americans are going to see it, and it could last for a long, long time. And who comes out of this a winner? I don't know. I one thing I will say this. The president said it last week, I think, when he's in Panama City, and I pushed back against it last week. I'm pushed back against it today as well. This idea that the tariffs are paid by the Chinese. It's not how it works. Now, you can be for the president's tariff battle. I would love to see him be successful here. I would love to see. I'm not a big fan of tariffs, but would I like to see a trade balance between the United States and China, something way better than the whacked out system where it is? Absolutely. So in sentiment, where the president's going, I get it. At the same time, this idea about, this is going to be great because the Chinese are going to pay. It's not how it works. If you have a tariff Chinese item, the tariff can only be paid when an American, or I guess you could have a Chinese citizen here as a tourist buy something, but in reality, an American citizen buys the product that then has a tariff on it, and that tariff goes to the Treasury. It's actually something Chris Wallace brought up on Fox News Sunday, had Larry Kudlow on yesterday, and had this interchange.
The president says China pays the tariffs. They may suffer consequences, but it's U.S. businesses and U.S. consumers who pay, correct?
Yes, to some extent. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Again, both sides will suffer on this.
Okay, so both sides will suffer, sure, to some degree, but do the Chinese care about the suffering of their citizens? Are they worried about what? What are they worried about? Totalitarian system. As much as China has moved into the modern age, it's still communist China. We tend to forget that. And so if the people are unhappy with paying more for, a soybean shipment or something, they don't care. We're in the United States, in a, like Dalton brought up this morning, in a Democratic Republic, you got to stay in office. And this is going to be maybe one of the biggest headwinds President Trump has when you start seeing whatever it is, whatever plastic widget that you buy for whatever price, cheap price at your local box store, gets more expensive because of these tariffs. And people say, well, the people buy American. Sure. In a lot of cases, there are head-to-head competitors in American companies. It'll be good. On some things, there's not. Those American companies aren't in business anymore making whatever that widget is. So the market does not like it. A story from MarketWatch says stocks are on pace for their worst day of 2019 as the U.S.-China tariff battle escalates. Monday's worst stock market performers are as U.S.-China trade dispute escalates. So here's who they think is getting hit the worst. Apple is definitely on that list. You have who else did they say they're worried about here? Caterpillar Company. Everything gets Caterpillar. I guess the Chinese are buying heavy equipment from here, maybe. United Technologies, Boeing, Goldman Sachs, Dow DuPont, Intel, Microsoft Corporation, JP Morgan, IBM, Home Depot. Really, Home Depot getting affected. Walt Disney, Visa, Walmart, American Express, Walgreens, Nike, 3M. 3M has been a charity case lately, hadn't they? Chevron Corporation, Merck, ExxonMobil, Johnson & Johnson. Some big companies here on this list. Coca-Cola, Travelers, Pfizer are really taking a beating in the markets today. So we'll watch what and how tolerant are you for this? Like, I've heard people call me over the years and say, I'll do whatever. I'll pay more. I'll take less wage. I'll do whatever for the United States to win this war. I think a lot of Americans would say, for a month or two or something, sure, if that's what it takes. But what if this goes on for years and years? When do you cry uncle on that? Do you? And is there a certain percentage or is it a certain duration that would have you push back against this? I mean, are you okay with this? You think, what if it goes on for, I mean, the Chinese got nowhere to be, right? What if it goes on for 4 years? It goes on for 5 years. What do you do there? Just a question. Another international story. This one, started last week when we talked about the U.S. Naval might moving into the area of the Persian Gulf because of scuttlebutt here and intel. Now you have this: two Saudi oil tankers hit by a sabotage attack off UAE. That was announced this morning. The ships were struck off the coast of the port of Fujairah, I think, or Fujairah, with one of the tankers due to be loaded with salty crude bound for the United States. Now, what happens here? Because obviously the proxy would be the Saudis, right? And you know, I'm not real crazy about it, but our allies, the Saudis, being attacked. What if the Iranians do a full-out attack on the Saudis? How involved do we get? Saudi Energy Minister Khalid Al-Falil revealed the tankers suffered significant damage, although it was unclear what the attack involved. He said, fortunately, the attack didn't lead to any casualties or an oil spill. However, it caused significant damage to the structure of the two vessels. Trading and shipping sources identified the Saudi ships as Bahri-owned, very large crude tankers. U.S. naval presence was built up in the Gulf over recent days amid a fervid standoff between Washington and Tehran. U.S. intelligence revealed Iran was on the verge of carrying out offensive action to disrupt and attack American and partner interests in the region. So there's one thing, you've heard the Iranian cleric say, what was it, last week said, oh, the U.S. fleet could be wiped out with a single missile. I don't know if the Iranian cleric knows how a missile works, but that's some saber-rattling rhetoric. I think we all know what would happen if the Iranians hit one of our ships. It would not be good for Iran. But what if they take it out on the Saudis? Would you then say we need to fight back against Iran and get in a war with Iran to defend the Saudis? And what does this mean to the price of gasoline going forward? Take on that when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Hey, if you want to catch hours of the show that you know, were busy actually working and doing things like that when they ran, that's cool. You can always go get the podcast a la carte from the front page of FMTalk1065.com. Better yet, though, you could subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher. Just subscribe for those free downloads. You get all our podcasts delivered to your smartphone. Also, if you're a user of Spotify, like if you get your music on Spotify, our podcasts are there as well. And TuneIn Radio, which is the app you use to listen to us on your smartphone. People are always asking us, hey, how do I listen on my phone? TuneIn Radio. So the word tune and the word in pushed together, TuneIn, and then radio. When you download it, which I've been running TuneIn Radio for 7 years now, something like 6-7 years. It is faultless. It never gives me a lick of trouble. TuneIn Radio, you'll go there, and when you hit TuneIn Radio, you open it up, hit local radio, you'll see FM Talk 106.5. Click it, and right there, you're listening to us on your smartphone. Or as always, of course, we're streaming on our website, fmtalk1065.com. Which, speaking of which, on the website, the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question, and asking what you would be willing to pay in a toll for the bridge and Wallace Tunnel. What you want to pay is zero. I get it. Me too. I'm with you. What would you be willing to pay? And we gave you the choices $0, $1, $2, $3, $4, $5, $6, kind of within the range of what's been talked about. 27% of y'all wouldn't be willing to pay anything. 24% $1, 18% $2, 20% $3, 7% $4. Nobody would pay $5, but 4% would pay $6. So you can go vote and let us know what you think when you vote online. Front page of FMTalk1065.com. On the right-hand column, you'll see the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. All right, time for a couple calls, and let me read through a few texts that came in here. This one said the U.S. trade deficit with China was $419 billion in 2018. Trade deficit exists because U.S. exports to China were only $120 billion. Well, yeah. I get the math. He said, okay, basically, imports from China were 540, ours were 120. It leaves a $419 billion deficit. Get it? So I think China has more to lose than we do in this. The tariffs will start driving jobs out of China and into other countries if it lasts longer. So China, in the end, will lose and the other countries will win. I like this. There's a lot of nuance to this, and I think that's important. Okay, there is part of the argument I would make that the Chinese could play the long game here. and they don't, they're not going to get reset with elections, right? Like we will here. So they can play a long game because of a totalitarian system versus what's left of a Democratic Republic here stateside. So I think in a negotiation, the fact that they don't, they're going to cry uncle a lot later than we will as a people, gives them an advantage there. But at the same time, to this texter, I agree with you about business moving. There's a reason why. Think about a couple months ago. Where was the president? Where was all the talk? Vietnam, right? About the trip to Vietnam and the negotiations and the discussion. That's part of this. Because there are other places to make... Here's the problem is we're just out of the frying pan in the fire, right? There are other places in the world that'll make plastic stuff for us stateside and do it cheaply. I mean, basically what we're buying when we buy Chinese goods, we're buying cheap labor. What you're not paying for, your discount is labor. You're getting cheap labor and not government regulations worried about pollution and all those things that they don't have so much of in China where they worry about that. So that's what you're getting. When you buy the discount, you're buying the work of people, get paid a lot less than people in the United States, and you're not paying for environmental protections and those kind of things that we do here stateside. So you can find other countries that will do that. Vietnam, India, there are other places. So as China holds out, new relationships and new manufacturing will come up in other countries. Now, we will continue the same kind of system, right, where those companies could outcompete American companies because of their low labor costs. So those will be true. It'll just be shifting from China, who is, you know, I would say our probably biggest competitor globally, even above Russia. China, our biggest competitor, it would shift some of that debt or some of that trade imbalance to other countries. At the same time, let me point out, there are other countries in the world to buy China's stuff. So the sword is sharp on both sides. So there are other countries, and you have a developing planet with more middle class coming online every year in places far flung where they will be able to buy these Chinese products. So China won't be completely without markets for its stuff. It's cheap labor. So, and by the way, too, somebody commenting, yeah, the saber rattling going on here with Iran. I just heard a clip. I think the Hungarian prime minister was at the Oval Office and the president asked some questions about what's going on with Iran. And he was saying, you know, if they launch an attack on us, they'll really, you know, and he threatened Iran. And that's fine. But I'm not worried. What worries me more than, even though there's some, believe me, I don't think they make decisions just like we do. But I think the Iranians are smart enough not to conduct a direct assault on the United States. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but I just don't think that that is in the plans. But what about a nuanced proxy war? What if the Iranians really, and remember the Saudis have been fighting a proxy war against the Iranians, right, with the Houthis and the rebels there in Yemen. So what happens if the Iranians really start hitting the Saudis, start blowing tankers out the Strait of Hormuz? What if they fired missiles into Saudi Arabia? Is that enough that we should respond in an attack of kind to Iran? That's the thing. I mean, there's no question. I think every American has their head screwed on straight. If Iranian assets attack American ships and all that, then Iranians are going to get what they got coming to them, and it's not going to be pretty. I agree with the president on that. My worry is that's the simplistic one. That's the one that it's probably the lesser chance of happening. The bigger chance of happening would be an Iranian attack, either through their proxy or just Iranian assets as it is, against the Saudis. They're our allies, right? Even though I hold my nose when I say that, but they're our allies. So what do we do then? Do we respond? Do we get into a war with Iran to protect the interests of the Saudis? Sleep well tonight. We'll be back tomorrow morning, bright and early for Mobile Mornings. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.